Welcome to the Nerd Party.
Hello and welcome to this very, very special episode of Missing Frames Between Takes Edition. I'm your host, Sean Eastridge. So normally on Missing Frames, what we do is we watch all the movies we should have seen by this point in our lives. Things like Citizen Kane, E.T., The Princess Bride, Monty Python and the Holy Grail, all those classics that if somebody told you they hadn't seen it, you would freak out. But in this case, Between Takes is kind of my excuse to do fun stuff in between the big episodes. But I don't know, this may count as a big episode. It doesn't get much bigger than this. I had the great pleasure and privilege of talking with Richard Donner about Superman to celebrate its 40th anniversary. It was released on December 15th, 1978. Richard Donner is one of the great filmmakers of all time. I absolutely love his work. You've got The Omen, you've got The Goonies, you've got all the Lethal Weapon movies. I mean, these are movies that one director, if that was the only film they directed, would be like, great, I'm good. Donner did all of them. So beyond that, he made my personal favorite superhero movie, Superman. And frankly, I think this is still the greatest superhero movie ever. I mean, it's hard to imagine a landscape without superhero films, but at the time this was made, superheroes weren't seen as something to take seriously. Comic books in general were not doing great. The most mainstream live-action superhero thing was Batman, and the Adam West Batman is fantastic, but it was essentially a parody. So no one thought you could take a superhero seriously, and then Donner comes in, and he makes this movie, and it completely blows the doors open for this film genre. And to me, Superman is just as important as Star Wars or Jaws or any of those big blockbuster films from this decade. It's a pivotal film in the history of cinema. And I mean, I love it. As a kid, this is one of the movies that made me want to get into movies in the first place. So it was an absolute treat to sit down with Richard Donner and talk about it and go through some of his experiences in the film. I tried to ask some questions. I'm a huge Superman nerd, so I've heard a lot about this movie, but I tried to ask him some stuff I didn't know the answers to. And there are a couple surprises in here that I hope will delight Superman fans or fans of Richard Donner as much as they delighted me to hear about them. And of course, I just had to hear him retell a couple of the classic stories. But I wanted to run down a quick roster of some of the names you'll hear because we go into it without much context. So first we have Tom Mankiewicz, an incredible filmmaker, passed away in 2010. He worked on James Bond films, the early Roger Moore. He was crucial to Superman being as great as it was. So we talk about Mankiewicz. We talk about Jeffrey Unsworth, legendary cinematographer. This guy did Cabaret, 2001 A Space Odyssey. We talk about the distinct looks of Superman. It's very distinctive in its visuals. We talk about Stuart Baird, the editor of the film, and we also bring up briefly Richard Lester, who is the director of A Hard Day's Night, Help, and was brought on to finish Superman 2 when the producers, the Salkinds, unceremoniously fired Richard Donner. We also talk about Jerry Siegel and Joe Shuster, the creators of Superman, and Donner shares a story I've never heard before about how they reacted to the film and also something really incredible Donner did to help them out of a tough spot. So we cover it all, but I you know what, let's just get to it. Real quick warning, the audio for the first minute or so is a little off and you'll hear it kind of shift. We recorded this via Skype, so he was in LA, I'm hanging out in Atlanta, Georgia, and so brace yourself emotionally, physically. If you need to cuddle with somebody to prepare yourself for that shift in the audio, feel free to do so. And last but certainly not least, I want to thank Richard Donner for taking the time to chat with me. This really was a dream come true, and it was an absolute pleasure. He's a wonderful one, 88, and he is absolutely on point. He's a total BAMF, and it was just great. So without further delay, let's just get to it. I hope you enjoy. Dick, thank you so much for being a part of this. I am so excited about this. I hope you are too.
As long as I didn't have to go to Georgia.
We managed to make this work. I think we're good so far. I've got to say, it's been 40 years since Superman was released. And it's literally this Saturday, the 40th anniversary.
Years.
40 years. My understanding is that with 40 years of Superman being out, you've probably gotten about 40 years worth of questions about this movie. So I have to challenge myself to try to find something you've never been asked. I don't know if I can do it, but I'm going to try.
It's going to be tough, pal. I promise you that.
All right. To start things off, let's get, like, this is something I've been wanting to ask you for years and years. This is the big one. Were you really on the toilet when you got the call for Superman, to do Superman?
I sure was. It was a Sunday morning, and I was hungover. Yes, it did. The phone rang, and this strange foreign voice ended up offering me an incredible sum of money and to make a movie, and I didn't believe him, and I thought it was one of my friends putting me on. And, lo and behold, one of the great flushes of all times.
I love it. So, what do you remember? So, you were a big Superman fan growing up?
As much as almost everything else that was published at the time. I mean, comic books were, at the early point of my life, my literature. And Superman was a very important one. We all believed in that character. And to the day that my mother threw out my comic books and the original Superman comic book.
Oh, real Action Comics.
Oh, many of them. I had all the first editions.
Oh, no.
They went by the wayside. But yes, I was a tremendous fan of his. Grew out of it by the time, probably in its second or third year or fourth year, and went on to something else. But Superman was a stopgap.
And so you get the call, you get the script, and it's Mario Puzo, David Newman, Leslie Newman. They wrote that draft that you got.
They did. The original one was Puzo. The Newmans wrote a screenplay, and it was a good screenplay, but it was being directed in an area that to me was sacrilegious. And so they wrote what they were hired to write. But when I read it, it seemed to be a parody on a parody.
I heard stuff about Telly Savalas. That's the big one.
Yes.
And do you remember anything else? Was it that one seems to stand out a lot because it's just so ridiculous.
But that was the intent of their material. They homed in on, not, they were told to home in on the word comic book, comic. And our comic books in those days shouldn't have been called comic books, much like the illustrated books that are coming out today. They have a life of their own and they're not comic.
Right. And this is what's interesting to me, though, because you got the script, you saw they were kind of, it was a decent script, but they were going in a kind of a parody direction. And this is, so the mid-1970s, so really the most mainstream live-action superhero was Batman, the Adam West Batman, which is hysterical, but also it is a parody.
Exactly. That's the same. That's good. I know they never picked up on that, but you're right. Pow, bam, big whiff. So.
And even comic books at the time, they're not necessarily, it's not a big thing. Like, you know, they're kind of seen as like, you know, the funny pages. Kids love them, but it's kid stuff. But then you come along and you're like, no, we're going to take this seriously. What do you think led you to make that decision to treat it respectfully and seriously?
Because that's the way I was brought up on it. When I was a kid, I respected it. It was serious. I believed in him. I remember I hoped he'd kill Hitler. Seriously, I mean, Superman went to war. And so he was an important part of truth, justice, and the American way, if you will.
Right.
And I didn't want to see that destroyed.
And you got to work with the late, great Tom Mankiewicz, who came in to help you do a rewrite. And you guys decided specifically, we're going to treat it seriously, but also we're going to focus on the relationship between Lois and Superman. That's going to be the heart
of it. No, it was Lois, Superman, and Clark.
That's right. Thank you. No, thank you for that very important distinction.
There was a wonderful film, French film, called Jules and Jim. I don't know if you ever saw it. And it was very much the same story, a trilogy, two people, two men and a woman. And Tom and I, maybe we carried ourselves out a little far on that, but that became kind of a graphic display what we really wanted. And it was just unrequited love, a woman who is in love with or infatuated with a superhero, a super guy, and nice and friendly to Clark Kent. And Clark Kent, who was desperately moved by her and in love with her. But so he had to play these roles, which to me was some of the best acting in the world was by Christopher when he did that.
Oh, absolutely. And it's still a delight to watch today. I had the chance to see the new 4K. Have you seen the new 4K remaster of Superman?
No.
Oh, no. It looks beautiful. And it's a movie.
Thank you, Warner Brothers. They never even told me.
I'll get you this action figure and I'll get you a copy of the 4K.
No, you don't have to do that. I get plenty.
But so you actually, to get Tom on board, you said we've got to do this, and you said come over to my house, and you dressed up in the suit and
I couldn't because when I said I got something I want you to get involved with, he said, what is it? I said Superman. He hung up on me. He thought I was putting him on. I called him out and I said, I'm serious, Tom. And we got it's interesting, it's fascinating, we got to save it. And I said, come on over, let's talk. And I had to convince him. And so just before I came, I smoked a little doobie, put on my Superman costume, which was the original one that eventually Chris wore for his screen test.
Oh, wow.
And Tom drove up. I came running across the lawn. My right fist extended out and trying to flap the cape. Tom got back in the car, thought I was crazy. That's what it took.
And it worked. You got it.
Totally. He's such a, he was such a great guy and such a great writer and such a great loss. He was a dear, dear friend of mine.
And he was, I love this, the creative consultant, quote unquote, on Superman, because for some reason, explain this to me, something with the Writers Guild, they wouldn't give him a writing credit for some reason?
The Writers Guild is made up of such a group of insecure guys. They're grossly unfair and unfair to their own people at times. And Tom should have had a written by screenplay on that with the others, because they did a good job. But his name should have been there. I was there from day one. What he gave, I begged them, I spoke to them, and childishly, immaturely, insecurely, they turned it down.
But I love that you created this role for him, and this role apparently cannot be, it's not allowed to be used anymore.
Oh, no.
Genius.
We put it in. I said, he's got to get a credit. And I figured once that was out, it would take them so long to fight it. It would already been out in the theaters and over and done with. Creative consultant, which he was on top of being writer. He was with me every single day I shot that film.
And you brought John Barry. You brought John Barry, and did you bring Jeffrey Unsworth on board as well, in addition to Stuart Baird?
With Stuart, I had just done The Omen with.
Okay.
And I wanted him. He's just a wonderful, creative, turned out to be a great director. And John Barry, I forget how he came on board. That's a long time ago. I would have to make up a story, and from the moment I met him, he was on the picture. There's no two ways about it. Jeffrey Unsworth, believe it or not, he was my original choice for The Omen, but he wasn't available, and quite honestly, Jeff was magical.
Talk a little bit about, there's a very distinct look to this movie, and this movie, beyond just looking amazing in one sense, has very three distinctive visual feels for each act. So was that early on where you did, what were those conversations like with Jeffrey about the look of the movie? Did you decide very early on that's what you wanted to do?
Yes, I felt it was a trilogy in a strange way. That Krypton, should have a life and a look of its own. It's Smallville, kind of Norman Rockwell-ish. It's and then the opening of the taxi door and the blaring of horns in Metropolis took on a totally different look with a great sense of inherent energy. Right. That was Metropolis. And although we didn't put punctuation marks around that or overly emphasize them, we looked them as three entities. And Jeffrey and John Barry were really responsible for bringing that to light.
And Jeffrey thought he caused the 1977 New York blackout. Is that true? You guys were shooting outside?
Well, we were shooting on 42nd Street at the New York News building. And Jeffrey, the shot went from inside through the revolving doors and then outside and looking all the way down 42nd Street towards the west side. And Jeffrey had lit it as one, and our New York gaffers used about every generator that they could get or that they could hide. Mm-hmm. And Jeffrey just wanted a little more light top down as Chris and Lois come through the revolving door. And he kept begging the gaffer, and the gaffer said, "Jeff, I can't. I believe me." He said, "Okay." He said, "I'll let you in on a secret." And he walked over to a light standard, which was right there. And he unscrewed the plate down at the bottom. And he said, "This is how New York gaffers steal light." And he plugged a clip into the light standard. And just for the world's greatest coincidence, at that moment, New York City had its blackout. And Jeffrey came running into me, convinced that he had caused it. He was the sweetest, gentle, most naive human being I ever knew. Good moment.
I had the great pleasure of showing my wife, Sarah, 2001 A Space Odyssey for the first time, to get to watch that and then go see Superman in theaters not long after. And to get to see two of his great works back to back was just wonderful.
That's great. You know, Somebody said they're remaking that?
2001?
That's what I heard.
No, they better not.
They better not is right.
So, audition process. You have Chris Reeve. He's skinny, around, what, 24, 25 years old. Margot Kidder, amazing. You said you met her. She tripped through the door, and you were sold on that.
When I say tripped through the door, she tripped in and fell flat on her face. Just lay there, looked up at me, and she...
Were you sold from that moment?
Instantly. We screen tested her, obviously, but she was the character in my mind. Chris, we screen tested some other people, but the minute I met him, this skinny guy with blondish hair, and it turned out, you know, that he swore to me he could build his body and work out, and he did. As we prepared in England all those many months, you could actually see almost on a daily basis as Chris started to expand not only his physicality, but his mental approach and attack of the character.
Well, so what was a moment? Film production's pure chaos. You're on this movie. I mean, it's amplified because this movie is so huge. Did you have a moment of clarity, whether it was watching dailies or just shooting something, where you had a moment where you're like, okay, I think this might be working. I think we might have something special here. Was there ever a moment, or was it just too crazy?
Well, you know, you never start a movie without kind of thinking that I'm going to make a film. You're not thinking about its monetary success, but you're thinking about, is this entertaining? Is this the direction I want to go with this? And you have hopes. You never know. I was very excited as scenes started to come together, as Stuart Baird would edit them, and I'd go in and sit with them and we'd talk things through. But as a whole, I never really thought about it and what kind of success it was going to be or what. It was a major, kind of a shock almost when you saw it with an audience.
Yeah.
To hear reactions.
You never test screened it, right?
No, this Salcon wouldn't allow me.
So the DC premiere, that was the first time you were like, all right, let's do this.
That's the first time I saw the movie. It's what you call a wet print. It had just, we were ready to cancel all the screenings because the Salkinds wouldn't give the Warners permission to print the picture until they got a certain amount of money over some silly argument. And so it was like what the industry calls a wet print. It had just come off. There were those that did the check. I did the check on the sound. I remember that separately. And but to see the entire thing in its entirety, I was part of that audience.
Jerry Siegel and Joe Shuster were at the premiere too, correct? Do you remember talking to them about the movie afterwards?
Well, not only that was in New York. And not only did I meet and talk to them, but I had heard a story about them that one of them had lost his sight and the other, I think, was still working as a postman in the post department. They, over the years, they had not gotten, or they'd gotten very little money for this incredible success. And I went to the head of the studio, a wonderful man named John Calley, the head of production, and told him the story. I said, I don't know if you know it, but I said, I'll do everything to stop this film unless they're taken care of. And he was the kind of guy that he immediately put them into a really wonderful pension. And when I met them in person was that night. It was after the screening. I was taken into a room by the executives, and there they were. And there was a figure on the table covered in a tablecloth when I met them, and they thanked me and they loved the movie. And
oh, that's great.
I was so thrilled that here's these two guys that had created this thing so many years ago, and now we're finally being thanked, and they liked what I did. And then they took the tablecloth off, and there was this one of three tall bronzes of Superman. They had made back in 1939 or 40.
Oh, wow.
And they gave it to me as a gift.
That's incredible.
And they in turn, not they in turn, but eventually Jeff Johns, who was my assistant and became the head of DC Comics, now has his own company. Jeff got one of them recently. Belonged to them.
That's really wonderful. So the movie comes out and it gets amazing reviews. I was looking through just to find archives of reviews of that time in that era, and even the ones that aren't as positive come across as snobbish, like a little pretentious, trying to find something not to like. But you know, you're like, you guys liked it. Just shut up. You liked it. But the movie is, how tempted were you? I mean, you have Roger Ebert, a 4-star review, calling the movie a pure delight.
I like him better now.
Exactly. You're like, all right, I agree with you every so often. But you have, I mean, this is incredible. Were you tempted just to get all these reviews, go to the Salkinds office and just wallpaper, just put all these reviews up, wallpaper their office, kind of be like, ha ha.
Look, I was prepared to come back and finish my obligation of two movies. And because it was successful, they decided they didn't need me. And probably because I had banned them from the set and wouldn't talk to them. Hey, they're producers. That's what they wanted. That's what they got. I gave them everything I could, and it worked out great for them. Worked out just as great for me. No, I have no, it's not worth it to flaunt those hangers.
Was it frustrating to see Superman 2 come out with Lester's name attached and people praising it? We're like, oh, Lester brings this stuff. And a lot of the stuff they're praising is stuff that you and Tom had come up with.
You hit it on the nose, pal. Yeah, it was a little infuriating. But what the hell? It's showbiz. And what, give up showbiz? No way.
Did you ever sneak on the television and super one of those sequels is on? Did you ever look at it and say,
You mean the other three?
Yeah, like, did you ever just happen to, like, just to amuse yourself, check out Superman 2 or 3 just to see what happened?
No, I really, I mean, I didn't wish them any ill. I love Christopher and Margot and the people that were doing it. I didn't particularly love them, the producers, but I certainly wanted to see what we started, continue with a modicum level of success.
And did you and Tom were originally talking about, if all had gone well and in this perfect world, you guys were going to keep it going, maybe do 3 or 4, trade off directing duties, which would have been great to see.
I would have loved it. He was a good director, Tom, and a wonderful writer. And we were creating these storylines and how they would integrate and how it would carry on for 3 or 4. But they weren't interested. They asked Tom to come over and put his energy in the rest of them, and he graciously refused out of respect for me.
Wow. Do you remember any of conversation? Did you think maybe Clark and Lois might get married someday? Villains they might fight?
You'll never know.
I tried. So we're now, I mean, the character's been around for 80 years. This movie's been around for 40 years. Superman's gone all over the place, thematically, story-wise. We've seen him go dark and gritty, only to kind of swing back in the other direction. To you, what's the most important element for Superman to succeed, especially in this day and age, as we were talking about earlier, just all the stuff going on? What do you think makes Superman such a lasting character, and what makes him so unique?
You know, it's really, it's very simple. And when I met Christopher, and his belief in both characters that he was going to play, and when he read the line truth, justice, and the American way, I mean, I don't want to bullshit here if I said, but I really got a chill up my back.
Yeah,
it was so believable coming from him. Hence, where is that sign? Oh, there it is. You know, verisimilitude.
Yeah,
that's him. He had a sense of reality. Although it was bigger than life, it had its own life.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe Chris, with good writing, was able to bring it to its fruition as what that quote was. And that quote, I remember that quote from a comic book when I was a kid.
Mm-hmm. And I know it's funny because I've heard stories about when that line is said in the movie back in the day, and people laughed because it's so he says it and everyone's like, oh my God, you know, Lois's line is perfect. You're going to run every politician out of town. But right. It's funny watching that today.
Jesus, hell, you got a good memory, kid.
I'm telling you, this is on my mind. But we watch it in a theater today, or I watch that movie today. No one everyone laughs at Lois's line, but no one laughs at it when he says it. You believe it.
He made it believable. He truly believed it. I think if the power that Chris had in his belief as an acting, but I figured he'd be actually flying one day himself.
Mm.
He was such a believer.
Yeah. And here's the last question. You ready?
Go.
Do you like pink?
That was a wonderful Mankiewicz line. That whole scene with Tom. That was lovely. And her reaction to that was, nobody could have done it like Margot. I hate to see they're both gone so early in life. Chris especially, and then Margot so recently. If there's any hope, they're up there flying around right now together.
I believe it. Watching that scene now, I believe it. And I mean, that's it. That's what I got. So hopefully we did all right. Hopefully I got a couple in there you haven't been asked before.
You did, actually. You did.
I've got to tell you, look, when I was a kid, there were 3 movies I saw that made me love cinema. And those 3 movies were Return of the Jedi, Back to the Future, and Superman.
Oh.
That is, I want to thank you for that. Superman the movie legitimize the character. I look back on this movie and I adore it, but when you look at the history of Superman, you look at this movie perfectly timed 40 years after the character was created, it made superheroes mainstream, but it gave Superman the respect he deserved. And that's incredible. So thank you for that. And thank you for making, look at the, I mean, I can, so Warner Brothers has so much of my money. DC has so much of my money right now. It's all your fault.
Terrific, and I really appreciate it.